From the WLRN Southernmost Bureau at the studios of Key West, I'm Nancy Klingener. A new documentary came out on Netflix last week. It's called Chasing Coral, and it looks at the impacts of coral bleaching on reefs. I recently talked to Dr. Mark Aiken from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He runs NOAA's Coral Reef Watch program, and he was a chief scientific advisor for the new film.
Coral Reef Watch is a program that uses primarily satellites, but also climate models to look at the ocean temperatures that cause coral bleaching around the world.
What is coral bleaching and what causes it?
Well, before we say what coral bleaching is, I think we need to explain what a coral is because most people don't know. And if you think about the children's game 20 questions, what's the first question? Animal, vegetable, or mineral? And the unique thing about corals is they're all three. So you have an animal, and living inside the tissues of this animal are microscopic algae, the plant or vegetable portion. These algae in their tissues are photosynthesizing, making energy from the sun just like leaves on trees or grass. And so these provide the primary food for the corals. The coral itself is clear so the light can get through to these algae. When the high temperatures cause a breakdown in the relationship between the coral animal and these algae, the corals are forced to spit them out into the water because the algae actually start producing toxins that would kill the coral. So they spit these out, it leaves the tissue clear, and you can see right through the clear tissue to the white skeleton underneath. Now we're getting to the last of the three, the mineral portion, because corals are building a limestone skeleton. Coral have actually ejected their food source. They're now starving, they're injured, but trying to survive. If the stress lasts long enough, then the coral will die and the whole thing will get covered over with mossy algae and look really ugly and start to break down very quickly.
What was your role in the documentary Chasing Coral?
They needed to get out to the places where the bleaching was going to happen to put the cameras in place and film the bleaching. So we provided them with, from our climate model work, the best estimates of where it was likely to be bleaching in the coming months.
What do you think this film brings to the conversation?
It shows people how spectacular these places are, how beautiful they are, and how important these ecosystems are. The second thing is it shows that this is a system that has been affected by climate change now for over 30 years. This is not some far distant future. Climate change is affecting coral reefs now, and we need to be working to shift to a clean energy economy and reduce the CO2 in the atmosphere if coral reefs are going to have a chance.
And bleaching isn't the only problem that corals are facing. There's also pollution, overfishing, just physical damage. Do you consider it the most severe threat facing corals?
At this point, the impacts of human-released CO2 causing climate change and bleaching is the biggest single threat to coral reefs because it not only affects those reefs that are close to people where all of the things you just described are big problems, but even the most remote reefs that are away from people that don't have those local stresses and may be extremely well protected against all other threats, those reefs are still being hit hard by bleaching. So if we don't get the climate system back into a level that is hospitable for coral reefs, we're going to be losing most of them.
And how is Florida's coral reef doing compared to other reefs in the Caribbean and the world?
Florida's reefs have been declining for quite some time, and in fact, you'll see that in the film. They talk about the changes at some of the reefs in Florida and show you visually what some of the reefs used to look like. It's been tough because I've been diving in the Florida Keys since the mid-1970s, and to see the changes that have gone on down there has just been heartbreaking. Every major bleaching event has ticked the amount of coral down a little bit. We've had major outbreaks of disease that have followed these heat stress events that cause the bleaching. And so often the bleaching occurs one year and a lot of corals survive, but then the disease comes through the following year. In just recent years, we've lost a lot of corals and in fact some rare but absolutely gorgeous corals, the big pillar corals. 95% of the pillar corals were lost in the state of Florida in 2016 alone. It's just been heartbreaking to see the amount of damage that's been going on.
We tend to think of coral reefs as fragile because individual corals are and because we keep hearing about the problems they face. But, you know, those reef structures themselves are so massive and so old. Do you think of them as fragile, and do you think that's a helpful way to think about them?
It's really a combination of being strong but being fragile at the same time. They're able to build these huge, robust, strong structures. But remember that the part of the reef that's living is a thin veneer on the outside of that big reef. So if you think about the reefs in South Florida, the spur and groove structures that are prominent in the reefs in the Florida Keys are old ridges that were built by coral reefs 125,000 years ago. So a lot of that structure has been building over a long time and through multiple periods where reefs are growing. But the living part that's keeping it active, that's continuing it to allow it to grow, is a very thin part on the outside that is very susceptible to damage. And so, yeah, it may be strong enough that it can sink a ship, but at the same time, it can't tolerate somebody kicking it with a swim fin.
We hear so much bad news about coral reefs. Is there any reason for hope?
The last 3 years has actually been tough. It has been very challenging emotionally. I'll get in reports of severe bleaching and pictures and sometimes just have to walk away from my computer and come back later because it's getting so depressing. But at the same time, there are some great stories of hope, and Florida has been right at the cutting edge. The efforts that have gone on for nurseries to grow corals, put them back out on the reef, some of that work was very much innovated right there in the Florida Keys. That's a great step in the right direction. But just imagine if you've got a really polluted river and all of the fish have died, so you stock it with a whole bunch of new fish. If it's still polluted, they're going to die. So until we deal with the climate change issue, all of these others are patches that are not going to be able to hold.
Anything else I should have asked you or that you think it's important for people to know about, you know, this film or coral reefs or bleaching?
Well, so just a little bit more on what we do is, yeah, we use satellites to actually look at the sea surface temperatures that cause coral bleaching. And because we can monitor that, we can let managers and scientists know when a bleaching event is starting so they can get out and they can monitor. And hopefully, in the near future, actually take some actions to help protect the corals. That becomes even more possible with the new tools that we have, or newer tools we have, using climate models where we can look forward up to 4 months in the future, giving an outlook on the potential for coral bleaching. So there you really have a lead time where you can start thinking about what to do. And so the next thing that needs to be done is, in addition to these nurseries, we need to be putting a lot more resources into identifying what are the things we can do to help keep those corals alive as long as possible and make sure that these ecosystems continue to provide for the people of South Florida.
You mentioned some tools. I mean, there are no blocks of ice big enough, I assume. Are we talking about shading corals? What do you mean by that?
Well, in fact, some things have been tried. Shading was one of the experiments that was done, and there are a couple of problems. The folks in Australia who did that, number one, there are the logistics of putting out like shade cloth, and then there's the fact that they were taking snorkelers out there and the shade cloth kind of got in the way. But they found other approaches like sprinklers could be used to just roughen up the surface of the water and provide some shade. But unfortunately, shading really isn't a good approach. The reduction in light is something the corals respond to by actually growing more of the algae, and it can make them more susceptible to damage if you have to turn off, you know, remove that shading. But there are other groups that are actually doing efforts to try and pump water onto reef, pump cooler, deeper water onto reefs to just add more wave circulation during the really calm periods that are most affecting corals. These are the kinds of things that could be useful for you know, certain individual rare corals or places that were putting a lot of effort into nurseries and such and trying to get the corals back. Beyond that, you know, this is an area of experimentation that more research needs to go into figuring out, are there things we can do to help these corals? The last thing is some of the nursery efforts are actually working on breeding super corals. This isn't genetic engineering. This is the same thing that was done to have dogs that are as variable as Chihuahuas and Great Danes. It's breeding for the characteristics that might help them to survive and then using those to put back on the reef. And so we really need to be looking at a wide range of tools and coming up with new ideas.
What can an individual, especially individuals in South Florida who live alongside a coral reef, what can we do?
Oh, well, being in South Florida, there are a number of things people can do. Number one, if you are a fisherman, if you are a diver, if you are just a boater, making sure you're not anchoring in the wrong place so you don't damage the reef, don't run aground on reefs. That still is a major problem. We have to make sure that we're not overfishing the reefs, so we're not removing especially those important fish that are the lawnmowers of the reef, the herbivores like parrotfish and surgeonfish that keep the algae down on reefs. They've been very important. We have to make sure that we're not putting pollution into the water. And in South Florida, the distance between someone's home or driveway or a road and the reef is not very far. And so any pollutants from lawn care products to house products to automobiles are all affecting the reef very quickly. And, you know, doing business with people who are being thoughtful about how they're treating the reef and making sure that we're supporting businesses and activities and the various nonprofits that are doing work to help the reef recover. So being right there in South Florida, there's a lot people can do.
Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me today, Dr. Aiken.
Yeah, I'm really glad to help you out with this.
That was Dr. Mark Aiken. He's the coordinator of NOAA's Coral Reef Watch Program. He also served as a chief scientific advisor to the new Netflix documentary, Chasing Coral. This is WLRN News. I'm Nancy Klingener.